Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, as usual. And, Jim, we've talked earlier in this week about the parade of people who have said the deepest criticism about Donald Trump lining up now that he's the presumptive nominee, and we'll have a little bit more of that later in today's Three Martini Lunches. But the big surprise on Thursday, and certainly seeming to be the biggest surprise in the mind of Donald Trump, is that the most powerful Republican in the country right now is not yet on board. That would be the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, who visited on Thursday with CNN's Jake Tapper.
You have said throughout this process that you will support the Republican presidential nominee. Now you have a presumptive nominee, Donald Trump. Will you support him?
Well, to be perfectly candid with you, Jake, I'm just not ready to do that at this point. I'm not there right now. And I hope to, though, and I want to. But I think what is required is that we unify this party. And I think the bulk of the burden on unifying the party will have to come from our presumptive nominee. I don't want to underplay what he accomplished. He needs to be congratulated for an enormous accomplishment, for winning not now a plurality of delegates, and he's on his way to winning a majority of delegates. But he also inherited something very special, that's very special to a lot of us. This is the party of Lincoln, of Reagan, of Jack Kemp. And we don't always nominate a Lincoln and a Reagan every 4 years. But we hope that our nominee aspires to be Lincoln and Reagan-esque, that person advances the principles of our party.
So Ryan's not there yet. Trump responded by saying he's not there when it comes to Ryan's agenda in the House. So, Jim, when you look at this, obviously Paul Ryan's still saying he wants to get there. He is the convention chairman, after all, so that could be pretty awkward if he doesn't get there by mid to late July. Some folks who love Trump are not going to be all that upset by this. They see Paul Ryan as the problem on issues like immigration and trade and the omnibus bill at the end of last year. But for Paul Ryan to say no to the tide of people endorsing at this point, and for the most powerful Republican to say he's not there yet, that's a big news story.
It is. And the only thing that has me less than fully thrilled about it, Greg, is that the idea of Ryan not supporting Trump at any point, of saying that he cannot endorse him at the convention, of saying come November he can't endorse him, I just have a hard time seeing that playing out. If it does, it'll be one of the bravest and boldest stances in modern American political history. But from this, look, Ryan is making, I think, a point that kind of has been right in front of our faces and yet kind of easy to overlook in this process. If you're the average Republican lawmaker, what has Donald Trump done for you? Probably nothing.
Not much, right? Yeah.
He may well have donated to your opponent, depending on who you are. Whereas if people say, oh, you know, there have been Republican nominees and everybody eventually gathered around them. Yeah, that's true. But here's the thing. If you were skeptical about Mitt Romney, think of not just your average Republican voter, but a Republican lawmaker, right? A member of Congress, governor, state legislator somewhere. Look, Mitt Romney was the guy who took on Ted Kennedy back in 1994 and almost beat him. Mitt Romney's the guy who went out and did fundraising for Republicans all throughout the 2008 cycle, all throughout the 2012 cycle. He was not a huge, you know, supporter of the Tea Parties, but, you know, Mitt Romney, when other Republicans needed him, Mitt Romney was there to grip and grin and attend the chicken dinner and do his part to raise money for other Republicans. John McCain fought his own party lots of times, and a lot of, you know, Republicans kind of found him a little grating. But you know what? During the Iraq War, nobody was more adamant in taking on the Michael Moores and the Code Pinks more than John McCain. And so face it, he's a war hero. You can go down the list. Bob Dole, he'd been leading Republicans for years and years. Almost every previous Republican candidate had something for you to latch onto, even if you were skeptical or didn't trust him on a particular issue, or they kind of struck you as not necessarily the fighter you were looking for. With Donald Trump, his character has been discussed at great length. He's not a great orator who articulates conservative principles in an exceptional way. He is not a guy who's been there raising money for the party, helping these guys get elected, you know, working with the grassroots. He's not a guy who has been fighting the good fight for any conservative cause. He's been kind of this celebrity for a long time, and he announces that he's left the party a bunch of times. He's rejoined the party a bunch of times. And so he shows up this cycle, and he gets the nomination. But what has he done to win you over if you started as a skeptic? Almost nothing. And so on the one hand, I salute Paul Ryan for having the courage to say this. As we've seen many folks fall in line, kind of foreshadowing our next martini, Greg, that ultimately it's inspiring to see one Republican say, yeah, you know, no, Ben Sasse might be never Trump. I just don't see anything conservative about this guy. And it's hard for me to say, yeah, America, you got to elect him. So kudos, Paul Ryan. I say this knowing that probably right around July, he's going to fall. You know, Trump will clear his throat in a conservative way. And Ryan will say, okay, I'm on board.
I would imagine that that will happen sometime in the next couple of months. But as you mentioned, it's not the popular thing to do right now. And that takes a little bit of courage. As we've talked about, as you just mentioned, ever since Cruz dropped out and Trump has become the presumptive nominee in the past 48 to 72 hours, you've had a lot of people climbing on board. You had the people that really made no commitments to other candidates say it's time to unify. You had some people who quietly endorsed other candidates come on board saying it's time to unify. We even talked about Bobby Jindal, who gave a pretty blistering speech at the National Press Club last year on Donald Trump, still reluctantly coming around, but saying he still definitely sees Trump as better than Hillary Clinton. No one excoriated Donald Trump more early on in the 2016 cycle than Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, did in July of 2015. He even gave a full speech on it. Here's just a piece of it.
A barking carnival act that can best be described as Trumpism. A toxic mix of demagoguery and mean-spiritedness and nonsense that will lead the Republican Party to perdition if pursued. Let no one be mistaken. Donald Trump's candidacy is a cancer on conservatism, and it must be clearly diagnosed, excised, and discarded.
He went on to say in that speech, it cannot be pacified or ignored, for it will destroy a set of principles that has lifted more people out of poverty than any force in the history of the civilized world, the cause of conservatism. I will not go quiet when this cancer on conservatism threatens to metastasize into a movement of mean-spirited politics that will send the Republican Party to the same place it sent the Whig Party in 1854, the graveyard. But fast forward to yesterday, in a phone interview, Perry says, quote, about Trump, he's not a perfect man. But what I do believe is that he loves this country and will surround himself with capable, experienced people and will listen to them. He wasn't my first choice, wasn't my second choice, but he is the people's choice. I believe in the process, and the process has said Donald Trump will be our nominee, and I'm going to support him and help him and do what I can. We need to come together and heal the wounds. When asked if Perry would consider being Trump's running mate, he left the door wide open. Quote, I am going to be open to any way I can help. I am not going to say no. Jim, let's go cancer.
I was just about to say, I was waiting for Rick Perry to say, I called Donald Trump a toxic barking carnival act, and he is the toxic barking carnival act this country needs. Jindal was bad, and Jindal at least had kind of been a, some of these guys you can kind of tell, Jindal said, look, I don't like either, but I'm going to go with Trump. Now, I still find this deeply disappointing, and I pointed out that Jindal had said that Trump is a madman, don't want anywhere near the nuclear button, and now he's going to vote for him. Either you didn't really believe that when you said it back in the fall, or you do believe it, and, you know, you think Trump is going to make nuclear holocaust great again. Then the other flip side is, I believe Scott Walker also issued a statement saying Republicans should support the nominee. I don't know if you saw the body language in that, but it really looked kind of like a hostage tape. I kept waiting for, you know, I'm trying to see if the blinks that Scott Walker make spell out Morse code, he has my family or something like that. No, but he just stood there, arms at sides, and said we had to do this. And it was just about the most unenthusiastic one you could possibly make. For perspective, Chris Christie had more enthusiasm when he was standing behind Trump at those speeches. I think you give credit to Ryan for saying, look, I know I'm supposed to say everybody rally around this guy, but I can't because I don't believe in him. And I'm not going to tell people to rally around somebody I don't believe in. And I feel like that's a more honest answer. It may not be better for the party. It may not be better for Trump. It may be politically risky. But if something in your gut strikes you as wrong, as JFK has said, sometimes party loyalty asks too much. You know, at some point, you can't let the will of a plurality of the voters overrule your conscience, your sense of right and wrong. So a little disappointing from Rick Perry. The irony is that none of these guys seem like the kind of guys who'd be easy sellouts here. It'll be interesting to see whether it gets held against them or whether, you know, Perry and Jindal and these guys are ready to ride off into the sunset and leave the political scene.
Well, the fact that they got into line so quickly makes you think they do have ambitions politically in the future. Rick Perry's up in his 60s, so I guess he still has some designs on something down the road, maybe a position in administration, who knows. But when you have some of these Trump surrogates, whether it's Ben Carson, who's now leading the vice presidential search, or others talking about, well, we have to unify because we got to stop Hillary. I'm very sympathetic to the stopping Hillary argument. But just once, I'd like to hear one of them say, no, we need to unify behind Donald Trump because he's going to be really good for conservative causes like this, 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 and this. But
yeah,
hasn't happened yet.
Less damaging is really not that inspiring a rallying cry.
No.
He'll be less damaging. He'll be the authoritarian on our side.
On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, you would think that one step towards bringing about party unity is to drop the crazy talk. It's one thing to bring outlandish things into the political dialogue when you're really in the heat of battle. Still not sure the National Enquirer belongs even in that type of discourse. But once you've basically locked up the nomination and all of your competitors have dropped out and you're likely to win a majority of the delegates well before the convention, it's kind of time to step back. And Trump seemed to do that by calling Cruz a tough competitor. But following his locking up the nomination for all intents and purposes, George Stephanopoulos gave him a golden opportunity to walk back his accusation that Rafael Cruz was somehow linked to the Kennedy assassination. Trump not only didn't back away, he defended the honor of the National Enquirer. Here's how it went.
Do you owe his father an apology for saying he was with Lee Harvey Oswald before JFK's assassination? You don't really have the evidence to back up that.
All I was doing was referring to a picture that was reported and in a magazine, and I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it. Now, I don't know what it was exactly, but it was a major story in a major publication, and it was picked up by many other publications.
It was the National Enquirer, and even the expert that cited said it couldn't be sure.
The National Enquirer gave you John Edwards. It gave you O.J. Simpson. It gave you many, many things. I mean, you can't knock the National Enquirer. It's brought many, many things to light, not all of them pleasant. The fact is that it was a cover story on the National Enquirer. It was picked up by many other people and magazines and periodicals and newspapers, and all I did was refer to it.
Jim, the presumptive Republican nominee just said, you can't knock the National Enquirer.
Yes, you can. Watch me. Yeah. So the first thing is, you know, he goes, oh, you know, there's that picture. Well, it's a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald, like, distributing pamphlets, and there's a person with a white shirt, and the person's back is to the camera. They've never identified who that person in the white shirt is. There's no particular reason to say, oh, that's Ted Cruz's father. There was no evidence. There was no, oh, we know he was with Oswald at this time. There are witnesses who remembered him. Ted Cruz's father at that time was pro-Castro and later turned against Castro. But there is nothing connecting him, you know, directly to that photo. You know, it's basically like, he, for all we know, by this standard, Greg, you know the infamous photo of Bigfoot up in the Pacific Northwest?
Yes.
No one's proven that it's not Ted Cruz's father in a suit in that picture. Right? I mean, it could be. You know, it's equally plausible. Secondly, Trump's like, well, I don't think anyone denied it. Yes, they did! Many times! Cruz said it was ridiculous. Like Trump just kind of closes his eyes to that. But I knew at some point he was going to bring up the John Edwards story, right? And everybody had said, whatever you say, oh, for Pete's sake, it's the National Enquirer. Everybody automatically shoots back, oh, but the National Enquirer had the John Edwards story. And we should give him credit for that. But there are two things. It's always kind of stuck in my mind since then, as much as I appreciate the National Enquirer showing America exactly who nearly half of them had voted to make vice president back in 2004. A blind squirrel can find an acorn once in a while. A broken clock is right twice a day. When you're checking out your groceries, Greg, when you see those, do you look at that and say, huh, I wonder what great investigative political journalism they're up to today? Yeah. Most of the time, it's that, you know, so-and-so, it's not really the space alien one. I think it's the star or something like that is the one that really is much more supernatural sci-fi, Bigfoot having gay affair with Elvis, you know, Photoshop type one. The Enquirer is a little more celebrity type one, but I don't know about you. All of them have secretly gained like 300 pounds.
Right.
They're all like have 6 months to live, right? And they look terrible and yes. All that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Somebody cheated on somebody else and it's, you know, shocking at a breakup and all that kind of stuff. And yet all of a sudden, John Edwards is a giant sleazeball. Like they suddenly took on an extremely deserving target, a political target, and they actually chased it down the story and found the proof. And I always kind of wondered, like, if you're with the National Enquirer and you get that scoop, it's almost wasted there. If you were John Edwards, you'd say, oh, for heaven's sake, it was right next to I saw Jesus in my toast stories, you know. It was you can easily dispel it. And if the idea was, oh, okay, the John Edwards story, National Enquirer wants to reinvent itself as, you might say, Drudge on steroids, right? This institution that was actually going to find the seamy side of political scandals that nobody wanted to look at. But they didn't. It still remains, Ben Affleck has gained 300 pounds and is secretly seeing, Caitlyn Jenner or something like that. It was like this really bizarre celebrity. So it's like they just kind of turned it on and off like a switch. Now, there's one other obvious thing going on here is that Donald Trump is buddies with the guy who publishes the National Enquirer. If you have this venue that is willing to print anything, then you want to defend that if you're Donald Trump. And it's very useful to hit Ted Cruz, and it's also very useful to hit Hillary Clinton later on. So we might be hearing about Hillary Clinton having wild orgies with space aliens or something like that. The only other last thing I'll observe there, we're in the whole, Ted Cruz is Don Juan Casanova, and he had all these affairs with all these staffers and all that stuff. The last time Donald Trump was citing the Enquirer, I remember hearing through the grapevine and being very skeptical of these stories that, oh, there's a video. There's a video of Cruz, and oh, it's going to be so scandalous. It's going to come out, and it's going to blow him up. It's going to end his career, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. If you remember back in 2008, there was the Whitey tape in which, Obama was allegedly denouncing Whitey, and either Jeremiah Wright was there or Louis Farrakhan was there. There's always some version of it. There was apparently a rumor back in 1988 that there was a picture of Kitty Dukakis either spitting on the American flag or burning on the American. There's always some rumor out there of this thing that's going to destroy somebody. Greg, if this story about this infamous tape is out there, somebody had it and had the ability to nuke him and just never got around to doing it. Nah, let's not use it, And the people said, oh, the Rubio people really had it. Well, then why didn't they use it? Like the window of opportunity for this unbelievably just devastating information has passed, making me think this evidence never really existed. So this is how rumors get started, and I mention all this just to be skeptical. When you hear something that's oh so good and so juicy, and somebody's got it's just waiting for the right time to drop. Someday, one of those rumors might be true, but it's worth exercising caution. And that's this is what the National Enquirer's role is in our politics, and we'd be better off if it wasn't. Although somebody might argue this probably dates back to 1992 and Jennifer Flowers. Happy Friday, everybody!
Yeah, the National Enquirer batting average I don't think is very high. Unbelievable that we got to talk about that, but that's where we are. Thanks, voters. Jim, have a good weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. See you Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.